How about Francis?
Myself here. Good morning. It's Francis Robertson. I'm the Marine Program Coordinator for San Juan County and doing a lot of work for from the county's perspective for Southern Resident Killer Whale Recovery here. So working closely with Lynn and others, Penny Becker and Soundwatch, for mostly looking at education for boaters. And we are embarking on a somewhat challenging project to do some marine spatial planning for southern resident killer whale foraging hotspots off the west side of San Juan Island with the assistance of Oceans Initiative and Smooth Consulting. So that's coming up. And I also, I guess I should put in my plug for Mickey Whales here too. That's my jam. Thanks.
Any highlights from the field last year?
Highlights from the field last year. I didn't get much field work last year because I had a baby in September.
Yeah.
So.
That's field work. All right. How about Eileen?
Sure. I'm new. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. I'm new to marine mammals, so no field work, but I'm an NRC associate working with Chris and Jamil and also Brad and Candy on looking at orca phenology in the Salish Sea, mostly southern residents, and using the Orca Master data set.
All right. Thank you for joining us. Fred? Maybe muted.
Sorry, I'm on mute.
Yep.
I'm on Okay, Fred Spellman, Port of Seattle Commissioner and recovering killer whale biologist. having completed my master's in fisheries and easy fish on the feeding ecology, and I get to vicariously observe them from my place up in the San Juan, and occasionally from my office overlooking Elliott Bay. Oh, and one thing. As a managing member of the Seaport Alliance, which is the combined efforts of Port Tacoma, we wrote a letter to the Orca Task Force expressing support for exploring ways in which we can do sort of an echo south, and are in the process of pulling our ideas together in that regard. And so stay tuned. We should be having some sort of public meeting to talk about that after we get our internal
collective act together. All right. Thank you, Fred. Has anyone else joined us on the phone?
Brad Hansen here.
Hey, Brad. Would you like to take a couple minutes and introduce yourself?
I'll take a couple seconds. Brad Hansen, Northwest Fisheries Science Center.
All right. Thank you. Do you have any observations, highlights from the field from 2018?
Oh, I don't know. I guess probably J50.
Yep.
Highlight, low light.
Yeah.
Okay. And anyone else on the phone? If not, we'll proceed.
This is Chris Harvey. I'm also at the Northwest Fisheries Science Center doing some working with both with Eileen Ettinger on her. Her Sun Resident Phenology Project, and then also working with some folks here that are developing ecosystem models of Puget Sound that hopefully will be used in the near future to test some marine mammal hypotheses ranging from predation effects of harbor seals to potential outcomes of management recommendations by the Southern Resident Orca Task Force. Highlight for me was being off of Central California on a groundfish bottom trawl vessel last night and seeing blue whales, a fin whale, humpback whales, and gray whales all on the same day.
It's a good time of day.
Fantastic. And anybody else on the line?
Hi, this is Aileen. I just joined. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm glad you made it. Thanks for making the effort.
Good. I can't get the screen to work. for the Cisco system, but I'll participate by phone.
Sounds good. We're just taking a couple minutes to introduce ourselves and share any highlights from our 2018 field work, if any.
Aileen Jeffries, Harbor Porpoise Project. Most of my monitors are in Canada now. I'm getting interesting results around Salt Spring Island. That's all.
All right. Great. Thank you. And anyone else on the line? All right. Okay, well, if for those of you who can see the screen, I'm just going to start in on some news and announcements. People should feel free to chime in. I'll cue you. And for you, Aileen, or anyone else who's having trouble seeing the screen, I'm just going to work through the agenda document, which I sent a link to that in the last couple of emails to the draft agenda. So you're welcome to sort of scroll along if you can get that document to open. So first news, since we last met, the recent things that have happened are on March 20th, I started getting responses to a Google survey, and we'll talk about the subgroups that have formed, and I'm going to give a quick synopsis of the draft data products that those subgroups are beginning to create, and Cindy's going to help me a little bit with that. And then March 26th, the work group leads met. So it's the first time I got to meet the leads of all the other work groups. And the one thing that was, I think, most exciting is that some of the work groups clearly are heeding the call in the new strategic plan for the Puget Sound ecosystem monitoring project, which is to promote collaboration between those work groups, which hasn't happened a lot historically. So that's going to start in sort of jumping around here, but you see May 16th, there's a joint meeting of the birds and the forage, fish, and food webs group. And we were invited to that, but I told them it was a little early for the whole group to sort of do two meetings in 2 months. But I'm going to attend, and I'll do my best to represent what we talk about today and anything we create between now and then. And you all obviously are welcome to participate as well. It'll be a meeting down at the aquarium in Point Defiance. So that'll be a beginning of a conversation. And I think I heard interest from the salmon work group and the toxins work group and the modeling work group. So I think the stage is set if we can organize ourselves to understand as much as we can about each species and be able to present that succinctly to the other work groups, the stage is set for, I think, some new collaborations. So those work group lead meetings are every month, and I'll continue to report back on other intergroup collaborations that I see on the horizon. So since Pete's not on the phone, I'm going to skip that next item. And I guess from the survey, somebody was interested in saying something about decisions reached by the governor's task force. I don't know who that was in the survey, but I guess I thought I'd open it up to anybody who would like to share the latest and greatest from the task force. It was certainly the topic, legislative status and lobbying around the legislative status seemed to be the focus of the first task force meeting this year. That's the main message I got, was that everybody needs to focus on their legislators, but I'm wondering if anybody on the phone or here in the room wants to spend a few minutes, say Pete's 5 minutes, talking about sort of the state of the task force. And normally, sometimes we'll have Todd Haas, who is acting as a liaison, join us, but he's not with us today. So I just wanted to offer that up as an opportunity.
This is Lynn. I'd be happy to just give a little overview. So I sat on the task force, and so last November, the list of recommendations went from the task force to the governor, and out of that, a budget request for over $1 billion was developed, as well as numerous orca-specific and orca-tangential legislative bills. So I think there's four main ones that have passed both the Senate and the House for the state, one related to vessels, one on oil spill prevention, one on contaminants, and one on kind of salmon habitat are sort of the general topics of those four main bills that have been linked to recommendations from the governor's task force. So the next steps are for, I think there's just a little tweaking of language that needs to be done, and then the governor will sign those, and you know, Washington State will do some rollout and education around those. There was 1 year or two task force meeting so far. I would say there was a lot of discussion on the legislation and updates, but also we had a special discussion on climate. And so we had guest speakers, and that while that was also related to ongoing legislative efforts in Washington State, it was sort of a larger issue as well of how we could link some of the actions discussed through the task force to climate and make that connection more clear. Yeah. And the next task force meeting, I think, is June 3rd. So we'll wait and see what the agenda looks like for that.
Okay.
Any questions on task force business?
They said that they were going to, have money to go towards research for that stuff. Where is that in the legislation, or is that anywhere? Or yeah.
I haven't heard what's been approved for the budget.
Okay.
So yes, there were some research focused actions.
Right.
There were some science reviews. There were some stakeholder groups. All kinds of different things. So I think we're waiting to see what gets funded in the budget. To see what next steps. I will say that there are at least a couple recommendations that were not connected to legislation that are moving forward. One that was already mentioned in the intros is Recommendation 22, which is the ECHO-type port group for the U.S. And so, as Fred mentioned, there's ongoing discussions about what that group will look like and how to plan an initial meeting for that group. And I think as part of that same recommendation, there was also kind of a whale alert system to professional mariners that's in the works, and the Washington State Ferries have taken the lead in furthering those discussions about that and coordinating with Canada and ECHO on that option as well. Yeah.
This is Cindy. A question came up the other day about funding for year two of the task force. Is that something that's built into the budget that's being decided right now, or is that something that's already been set aside?
I have no idea.
Good question.
But we already had a meeting, and they've already planned the next one and set dates, so I assume they have funding for those somehow.
That's what we figured. Somebody must be paying for it.
Yeah. I have faint memories of...
Glenn, this is Brad. Based on what we heard down in San Diego between the governor's request and what the House and Senate marks were for the various... line items in the budget?
This
is Jerry. I've been tracking the budget a fair amount. The Senate budget mirrors the governor's budget as far as the funding goes. The House budget cut a lot of money out of there, put it up other places. The issue, though, is that none of this stuff is going to get paid for unless there's an additional revenue stream, which has been looked at as capital gains tax, which is being supported in the House, but not in the Senate right now. So everything, we're all going to have to wait until, I believe it's the 28th, when the session ends, and we know what the final compromise is going to be. Also, right now there's no money in the budget to continue the task force beyond July 1st, but people are expecting some money to be dropped in there at some point to at least get it to when it's supposed to end, which is October.
Jerry, I was curious about the funding for WDFW enforcement. Is that clear that that's, is it, there'll be a boost in funding?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where that stands on the enforcement issue. Again, nothing is final until their recession is completed. Things change so quickly right at the end that it's kind of not even worth guessing at where they're going to go until that money's dropped.
I think. There was some money in last year's budget that's supporting increased enforcement. Probably not at the levels that's ideal and laid out in the task force recommendations, but there is already some additional state funding for enforcement.
So any other members have any news they want to share before we move on to announcements?
I guess... This is Lynn. I'll share one other piece of news. While there's been a lot of action at the Washington state level, I also just wanted to let people know that there's been a lot happening in Canada as well. So under the Ocean Protections Plan and Canada's Whale Initiative, and under a imminent threat declaration that the government of Canada declared, they are working on sort of a set of short-term actions for 2019. They had technical working groups, not unlike what the task force work groups looked like, and they drew a lot on what had come out of the task force as a starting point for their discussions, as well as measures they put into place last year, like some fishery closures and some voluntary slowdown and movement trials for ships. So I would anticipate in the next couple weeks they're having consultations and public meetings about some of the options they're considering, and I would expect additional announcements coming out of Canada for protective measures this year in the next few weeks.
Thank you. Any other news?
I'm not sure whether... Covered by Lynn, but the current recommendation in BC is that they'll have a 400-meter buffer as compared to the 300-meter that is currently before in the state bill.
Yeah, that's my understanding, too. They were trying hard to emulate what Washington was doing. At the same time, Washington was changing the language in the bills. So.
On a daily basis, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's ironic now that the incentive isn't to run the passage, that the easier, the closer approach. Now our side is the case, but fortunately, it seems like the well is spending more time on their side now.
Right. All right, let's. I'll move on to announcements and quickly blaze through this. It's just after 10, so I'm going to try to catch up on our agenda. Today there's a training for indicator leads, and for us that means that the Puget Sound Partnership has vital signs. One of them is the Orca vital sign, and the indicator, which is used to assess that vital sign, is the number of southern resident killer whales. It's the census that the Center for Whale Research does. So I don't think Ken's been able to join us this morning. He said he'd try to call in, but he is the lead on that, and basically there's a new vital signs website, which will be launching this spring, and a new interface to it that folks are getting trained to use today. But at the moment, only Ken and the center need to worry about that. And the data is already up to date for 2018 anyway. So I think we're good in terms of the indicator leads. Tomorrow, back here at NOAA, there's a Southern Resident Killer Whale database workshop regarding tracking the health of individual whales. There's a science panel meeting this week as well. And I noted in their agenda they're going to discuss what's called the Puget Sound Vital Sign Revision Project, which is just a way for me to flag for you that over the next year or so, the partnership will be looking at the vital signs and considering alternative indicators. So that could, for us, mean other marine mammal indicators beyond the southern residents. It could also mean different metrics for the southern residents. So I've blocked out about 15 minutes to talk about that. in terms of southern resident metrics later in the meeting, but just wanted to know that you know that that's happening, and there are opportunities to participate in that revision project now for those who are interested, but we'll certainly be participating as a work group over the next year or so. I anticipate that'll be the focus of our fall meeting, actually. And I also noted that there looks like there will be an appropriation of scientific research funding that maybe will be distributed by the science panel. So they're talking about a process. And so if you're interested in that, it looks like that's a topic of discussion currently within the science panel that I noted. May 1st, I've signed up for the Marine Waters 2018 Overview Workshop here at the University of Washington in Seattle. So if you have anything you want me to present on behalf of the work group there, I'm happy to do it. And so that's part of the reason I've been motivated to try to generate content for these species briefs, is to have something to say then. At the very least, in our January meeting, we decided we would make sure that at least the southern residents were part of that annual report, because it has always had a marine mammals and birds section, but for the last couple of annual reports, there have been no marine mammal sections, no content. So Ken has committed to providing his data, so that at the very least we'll summarize the southern residents in that printed annual document. But it only comes out roughly a year after the year it reports. It's a printed thing as well as an online thing, but it takes quite a while to put together across all the different work groups. So we'll make a commitment to that, but I'm also interested in ways that we can annually, more efficiently and in an online way, update our audiences regarding the state of the marine mammals we think are high priorities. Let's see. There's a steering committee meeting that Jenna wanted us to note. And that is on May 14th in Olympia. I'm sure Jerry will be there. And May 16th is the joint meeting I mentioned before. I expect there'll be more of those joint meetings, but that's the first that I've heard of promoting intergroup collaborations. So I'll attend that, and again, I'm happy to represent any content that others would like me to. And we've got the task force meeting in June, and then the last thing I wanted to announce is that in June or July, we have been given the opportunity of publishing brief accounts of any species that we want in the Encyclopedia of Puget Sound. And they have pretty good coverage for the most common marine mammals, so we can update their content for those animals, and we can add content for the ones they don't have. So that's sort of a standing offer for these briefs, which I have a template for that's been pre-approved by Jeff Rice, the editor there. They also are interested in up to 4 updates of species profiles, which are a lot more in-depth, and have offered $1,000 to non-federal employees or non-state employees as an honorarium to try to motivate folks to write content for the encyclopedia. So those are my updates. Does anyone else have announcements they want to make about future things on the horizon in 2019? All right, and we will move on. Okay, so business at hand here. Let's see if I can get back to my screen. Thank you. That explains it. Thank you, Grace. All right. Business at hand here. First order of business, I circulated the meeting minutes from last January along with a report that we required to do to the steering committee and the science panel and our work plan for 2019. And I've asked for comments a couple times online, but I'll ask now if anybody has any changes to any of those documents before we approve them, and then I'll put them on our website as official records. All right. The anonymous narwhal is thinking about editing it, but... okay. All right, let's... So, any objections to approving the minutes, the report, and the work plan?
Could we just do a quick look through the work plan?
Sure.
That might be
helpful. Happy to look at that. And before we go in here, I'll remind you that the strategic plan asked us to try to devise a work plan that would promote the three key elements of the new strategic plan, which came out last fall: collaboration across monitoring programs, adaptive management, moving towards adaptive management of recovery efforts, and generally improved communication. So this is what our work plan looks like. So main objectives are we're going to get to some of this today, is discuss and further define our audience, geographic scope, species under consideration, data products, and membership and group logistics. So we'll touch on at least four of those today, and I hope that'll set us up for 2019. Check that box off. Recruit additional members to include experts in all marine mammals that currently inhabit or have been sighted historically. I'll show you that we've made great progress on that one. But I think I'll end the meeting by asking for help finding a few more experts. Build an inventory of local marine mammals. That's something that John Scordino asked for last meeting specifically. There's a draft of that from previous years, but I think that can be one of our long-term projects over the summer. I'll revive that old document, and we can all collaborate to try to bring it up to a current accurate assessment of who's doing what, ideally on both sides of the border. But we haven't really approached that inventory question yet. And then we aspired to generate some sort of brief synopses for the high priority species. And we'll talk a little bit about what that's starting to look like, but I'm totally open to alternative formats, and we can have lots of different data products depending on how distinct we think our various audiences are. But the high priority ones that we have on the list so far are southern residents, where that means we continue to have Ken update the population data, and we at least begin a conversation about other possible metrics. Harbor seals are high priority. There's a recent December WDFW presentation that's got data that could be distilled for some of our audiences, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Biggs killer whales, Monica's been working on a draft of a brief for them, which I'll show you, although she's not able to attend today. And humpback whales are on the list as well. Last topics were distribute any species briefs that are approved to the following entities: the steering committee, the science panel, the task force. This is on the communication side, obviously. And then the marine waters report, which I've mentioned. There's also coming this year a new biennial state of the sound document. And as I've mentioned, the Encyclopedia of Puget Sound has been opened up for us to use as a communications channel. And we're going to get a new website in addition to the Vital Signs getting a new website. Basically, the Puget Sound Partnership is revising all of their web infrastructure and launching new versions of it this spring. So that's going to be a little painful for those of you who have been trying to learn about Google Docs, because they're switching to something called Box. But I will work hard to make that as painless as possible for us. And then there's topics for discussion. Which I guess I'll invite you to read through. I think I've mentioned most of those. And then making connections with other work groups was our last aspiration in this work plan. And we've done that with Forage Fish and Food Webs. And as I mentioned, I think with the help of folks like Chris, we should be able to connect to the modeling group and start thinking about salmon as well. Is that a good synopsis?
Yes, thank you. Yeah. So were you looking to get approval that this is good? And all right. I guess there's at least one change I would suggest is one of those bullet points about pinniped culls. I would say what we're doing is looking at policy development regarding pinniped predation on salmon.
Yeah,
is maybe a better way to describe where we are in the discussion right now. And I'll take kind of a hint out of that discussion that happened for the task force. That seems a little premature to say we're evaluating culls. In my mind. So I don't know.
Where do you see that? This
in the
here?
First discuss.
One of these time-sensitive actions?
The first bullet on that list,
So suggesting we maybe just strike this for this year?
Or just change the word cull to pinniped predation on salmon, something like that.
Great.
I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves in that discussion.
Yeah. I think that's a good... Yeah, the WDFW presentation in December spoke specifically to cull, which is why I put that in there. But I agree that what I would like clarity on is which salmon of what age class are getting eaten and how many. So, all right. Well,
For the,
thanks.
Good thought.
High priority species, what was taken into... Because we're doing briefs for hopefully all of them, right? So why were those ones in particular? I mean, obviously the field residents, I know that one. And the seals, because they're linked to that.
Why is a good question.
Yeah.
I think in January, the most pressing sort of public policy issues, other than the southern resident killer whale, were... sea lions and harbor sea lions getting shot at the time. And so it felt like a high priority to focus on the role of bigs in the ecosystem.
Because with the bigs, they're eating seals and they're eating porpoises. So I'm the porpoise person. One of the porpoise people. There's many on the call here. But so I just wondered if that was, because we're working on the porpoise brief. So we're working on all of them, I just wasn't sure why there are only the four of them there.
Yeah, this was sort of a early prioritization.
Okay.
Happy to add some. I tried to be specifically, this is including at least.
Okay.
So just making sure that we honestly, the history of the work group is mostly focused on southern residents.
Yeah.
If you go way back, like into the 2000s or even 1990s, there was some more focus on harbor seals.
Mm-hmm.
But in response to the PSEM's call for collaboration across work groups, it felt like a good time to expand what we our expertise.
So basically, it's like we're doing all, we're going to try to work on all of them, but those are the kind of the ones that we need to get going first. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And we could, if you want to emphasize, I can put harbor porpoises on there if you want. It's really easy.
Seems worth adding. Yeah.
This is Cindy. I was going to suggest we add gray whales to that as well.
All the emaciated ones have been.
All right, let's put them both on there. Will you help us write something about gray whales, Cindy H?
Yeah.
All right.
Hopefully Cascadia will help with that as well.
Sounds good. Yeah, John did email, said unfortunately he can't join us today, but he'll be engaged here soon. All right, any other changes, any suggestions before we move on? Okay, any objections to approving the minutes, the report, and the work plan? All right, hearing no objections, we'll call those approved and move on. So I think luckily we've talked through a bunch of these, what I see as opportunities, And I really wanted to mention those to set the stage for talking about our geographic scope and audience and products. Let me just quickly walk through these just so you, if you're curious about what the Marine Waters report looks like, it's a bit hard to find online, but I put a link in to the 2017 report. And I guess I'll just say that as an oceanographer, I know that this mostly started as an oceanographic effort. It was the Marine Waters Work Group annual report, but it's grown over the decades to be broader and broader. And so, for better or worse, it's one of the more integrative annual efforts that happens, in addition to the Sealer Sea Ecosystem Conference. So anyways, if you're interested, you can click on that link and you'll go to a 50-page PDF of lots of plots.
I think it's cool that I've seen those, and it's nice because they're short little snippets, like just like a couple paragraph summary of each thing. So it's easy to kind of get the gist of it and move on to the next thing. So it's nice to, it's a nice product. Just sucks that it takes that long to get it out.
I do have some hard copies, so if anybody would like a hard copy, I'm happy to get you one. But that's a way to look at it. The species brief, I think I've circulated this template, but we're modifying it slightly for each species, but it's sort of an organic process that I think you'll see that we can change it over time as long as we stay roughly within that scope. I think then Jeff will be happy with it. I also mentioned that there's a difference between these briefs that the Encyclopedia of Puget Sound will publish for us and the profiles. The best example of a profile is one that I've looked at pretty closely with. There is a southern resident killer whale subgroup that's I've begun in the language that will be published on the new website this spring. That's happening in this draft of emerging webpage, and I'll be doing a bunch of work this summer migrating all or could manifest on that webpage. You know, it's sort of our space to do whatever we want with. Group to use for their own advocacy or science needs, and we ecosystem. The one thing I haven't mentioned, I mentioned this revision project. The other, they're looking for folks to sort of help in the initial. All right, so 1025. One of the, thank you for the suggestions, but the two suggestions were to summarize the survey. So I want to go through quickly what that form. You're welcome to take the survey, but the. It basically asks, so would you like to lead or join a group on any of these species? So these are the species that summarize verbally, but you're welcome to go into the responses and explore them, because folks signed up to work on humpbacks. Southern residents and grays, you'll see these are the folks who signed up via the form for those. Marine mammal work group members, so we're communicating with each other. So we'll definitely do that. Science panel. And then equally weighted were elected officials and naturalists and ecotourists, very important by some. And then the next level down were other people, our audience. And I honestly can't quite tell if it's sort of bimodal, like we need to. And then the last question was that on the geographic scope, it was pretty definitive. Let's just check. Work group may be distinct from the scope of other PSEMP work groups. And I'll just mention, Jerry, the main, most folks seem to resonate with Salish Sea and the outer coast of Washington to the outer edge of the continent on Fuca. And then there were two votes for the Salish Sea, just everything east of what we, at least in the short term, while we're writing content in 2019, what we want.
Three votes. So this is where it gets confusing, whether, is that one sound versus the Strait of Honfuca and all the other stuff. So what is...
Salish Sea became accepted.
I came here 5 years ago, so I've only known it as the Salish Sea, so I only recently...
Scott, this is Jerry. And since it was dealing with the state legislature, is that the Puget Sound is the area, legalism there, and in a lot of ways when we're talking to the state and funding, as you mentioned... PSEM doesn't have a geographic definition an out-migration. The marine waters people upwelling and transport through the Strait. So each group We find that wherever the, I don't think there is or ever will be a firm definition of the geographic.
I had the same question about the geographic scope, but before that, the monitoring groups, work groups, were asked to.
I guess I'll jump in on structure of the legislation, actually, probably the tightest connection for years, but it's whoever, you know, each work group thing, again, it gives the work group the opportunity to define it for themselves, and obviously which is what the monitoring and assessment program is supposed to do.
And I'll putting out there, but we have a unique thing because we have the charismatic megafauna, right? Everybody loves them. Get that information out there.
Just started thinking about, like, what are all the possible audiences? I definitely had in my mind Puget Sound Partnership staff and the Leadership Council, folks like Stephanie Celine, who lead the task language.
A story.
And I think this is the other thing I think is going to emerge from that group think. What do we as a group think the role of the species is? That's part of the reason I tried to put in maybe some less conventional audience.
Changing into something else. Are we still looking for short briefs, or are we going to do...
Which is a very scientific assessment of the abundance, the trend, specific to Puget Sound. Others, as we know, the species range is much broader of the stocks. And if this is intended this basically and do it in a way that's accessible for other audiences.
It sound folks that they're kind of interested in two levels of something simple and then site stock assessments a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think Cindy and I are thinking about harbor porpoises. We're leaning heavily.
Well, I think it goes to more like we were talking about before about telling a story with some of the other updated information so that it's more accessible to... popping around the internet.
We'll show you like the drafts, and honestly, the devil's in the details. Like, it's the science panel. Like, that was too long. Like, I want something I can read in 5 minutes, not 20 minutes. Partnership science audience, and then elected officials, leadership council members,
and everything they encounter, or whether you want to focus in on a species. And
yeah, that's the other place that the devil was in the details for the harbor porpoises. Is as you go back through the. So honestly, I think there's interesting science to be done there to try to build as a... any other thoughts on... I mean, we're sort of segueing into... All right. One thing I wanted to just highlight... before we look at the drafts of our data products, is I was actually pretty impressed with this. I'm not sure, Lynn, who created this, but this, I hadn't seen this. But I thought, just in the spirit of creating data products that communicate with a wide range of people.
Our story map.
Is this, how new is this?
Pretty new.
I hadn't seen it, but it's...
Yeah.
I'll just scroll through it, but this is a web-based presentation of a bunch of content that is just, I want to just try to get us to think really into the future a little bit, because we are getting a new website. The tools for presenting information online are getting more and more advanced. Graphs are interactive. You can download data. You can you can show how to reproduce how you created graphs, things like that. So just going to sort of scroll through this. It's kind of an amazing presentation of history and data and photographs. So part of what I've been trying to cue the subgroups to do is pull together all the pieces that you would need to build something like this. So for me, it's a really interesting mix of data and science, but presented in a way that could reach a really broad range of audiences, animations, video. So over the next few years, I think for each species, we may be able to take sort of radically different approaches to the Marine Waters printed annual report. So that's kind of where I would like us to move in towards. But right now, we have a lot of organizational work to do for each species.
We have to get all the stuff together that you're going to put on there, and then figure out putting how
to
put it on there.
So you're welcome to scroll through this more slowly, but it's I thought it was a really interesting presentation of how you can educate and share science data.
It's a specific like ArcGIS tool and format that they've encouraged on their platform. Ours isn't as a map and geographic focused as some other ones I've seen, but I think that's where it grew from.
That's very
cool.
When you think about GIS doing print, things crossing over.
I'll chime in here. This is I've seen several of these story maps now to share research projects and stories from around Puget Sound, and I would say this is the way to go to communicate to a wider online audience in a really engaging manner. But, Scott, is there a budget for putting these together eventually? Because I would imagine that these are pretty labor-intensive to actually create. Well, that might be worth finding out.
Yeah, I think in the short term, the answer is no. But there is, I think, on the horizon, you know, each work group has a coordinator or has a place for a coordinator. And some of them are funded through the partnership. And I think if we do a good job of generating content and showing that we have data to present, that we may someday earn a coordinator.
Scott? This is Jenna.
Oh, hi. Glad you could join us, Jenna.
Hi. I've been listening. I'm actually working on the outline for a new process for awarding CSUN funding. So this question and your discussion are really timely. I'm glad that you're generating ideas and maybe talking about some really what would be the most effective ways for the work group to engage and move our CSUN objectives forward and... So anyway, there is funding for PSUMP work group support. So that's the coordinator support. But there's also another couple pots of funding for what we call PSUMP synthesis. And we're framing this very broadly. So it could be generation of a report, or it could be I would love to see more story maps and things like this, and things that are really pulling together information. In a compelling way, I think, both for the monitoring community, but also to reach other audiences. So we will be putting out a sort of RFP process, and we want the ideas to be generated ideally from within the work groups and have support and engagement from work groups, and there will be funding to support projects exactly like that. So please do keep discussing the ideas, and it'll be... announced really soon, and we'll start with a webinar to further explain it and make sure everyone who's interested in these funds, particularly from work groups, is aware. And then there will be a competitive RFP process to award those funds. And in the past, it's just been done kind of idea by idea, work group by work group, but now there's enough energy and momentum and keep that we really need to have this transparent, more open process. So, more coming soon, and I'm happy to answer questions that come up. I'm a little bit multitasking here, but I am on for any other questions.
This is Pete Schrader. Hello. I'm sorry I'm late, but is your funding limited to PSAMP work groups?
Well, our funding currently have is from EPA and from the state, and specifically designated to support PSAMP and to support monitoring and assessment projects and products and to support these communities. So,
is that the $1 million you were talking about or separate money?
That's a good question. Jenna, I wanted to first say I introduced Todd, but I'm trying to highlight on the screen now that you are the Puget Sound Partnership monitoring lead. So, I've benefited a lot already from your help. But that is distinct from the lead, like the coordinator for the Marine Mammal Work Group.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was a question earlier, I think before you got on, Jenna, about something I saw on the science panel agenda for this week, which was looked like funding that was really aimed more at scientific research, but that's a different allocation, right?
So there's a couple different things. So those are, and so there is additional PSUMP funding that's more along those lines as well. So I do have a summary document I can send you, Scott, that I put out to help with the budget process, and I know Jerry's seen it too and others, but that highlights, well, actually, we might have a separate document that highlights all of the partnership budget proposals. And so we should know early next week what actually should be in the final budget. But there is the PSUMP funds. So there's two categories there that would be in addition to these funds I already mentioned. So regardless of what happens with the state budget, we have ongoing funds that we're going to use to solicit projects for that would support either the synthesis sort of thing, or if we get additional money from the state, we would have more money for the sort of collaborative synthesis projects. This would be mostly using existing data. Or if one of the other line items would be for actual monitoring or studies that fill priority gaps. And so we're this was part of the discussion. I don't know if you were on the last work group lead meeting, but we discussed this. It was wanting to align it with things in the action agenda or key gaps from implementation strategies or vital signs, but it wouldn't necessarily be super, super limited. The science panel, it's called the science research account, I think, is an account that's always existed. I think it's existed since the partnership started, but there's never been any funding allocated to it. So this would be the first time that funds were maybe allocated for that, and those are... So that, but then those have, the process through the budget process has kind of attached some specific, kind of assignments to those funds, or priorities for those funds. And I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it's, effectiveness for Chinook. I think further understanding the Chinook marine survival, stuff. And then also one related to shellfish. So, there will be more discussion of that. Also, all of the briefs that have more background on all of the topics that are discussed at the science panel this week are online. So I can add a link to that in the Google Doc further up. So if anyone wants to click on those, you can read more about the discussion topic for the funding and for the vital sign revision project. And there's actually a lot of really interesting agenda items in the next few days. And I'll be there in person too, so if there's anything specific you want me to keep an ear out for, I'm happy to report back or answer questions after the next few days as well.
Great. Yeah, if you could
add... I'm also a team member on the Vital Sign Revision Project. So I'm also one of your point people for questions about that. But as Scott mentioned, that's going to be like an ongoing project, and there will be lots of communication about specific opportunities to engage coming up.
Well, feel free to add more links.
Other questions? Yeah, I'll add some links in there in a moment. And... I'm sorry, I'm not there in person. There's kind of a crazy week.
That's okay. So it's almost 11, and we've had an initial discussion of this, and I guess I'm happy to table this until our fall meeting and just maybe take notes in the subgroups as we try to develop content. I think it's going to become clear that there's a line that we'll each draw for each species between stuff that's too technical and the story that's interesting. And I think that story, I'm hoping that that'll change, that we revisit these each year, and we ask that question, like, what was the most interesting event that happened last year? Have any trends changed? And we update them annually. So the last thing I wanted to get your feedback on before jumping into... some of the subgroup work that has gotten done in the last couple of months is just to make sure that we're not missing any species. So I have a list that I've tried to build from a couple of review articles and looking back at old Puget Sound updates. So I wondered if folks could just take a minute or two and look at this species list and let us know if we're missing anything.
Are you just going for common species or ever seen in Puget Sound species?
Well,
Those are two different lists.
I wouldn't mind having a list of everything that's ever been.
Because you have a bottlenose dolphins in there.
Yep.
They're hanging out.
Yeah, most of these gray ones are pretty darn rare, but. So I guess I wouldn't mind at least having a list that we could work our way through over the next 5 years, let's say. And it doesn't all have to happen.
Cindy, there's so many people on the humpback whale. When you can take me off of that, and I'll concentrate on gray whale.
All right.
I had the pumps gray whale up to.
Oh yeah, you're changing our stats. The leaderboard is shifting. Okay. This is a good time. Anybody's welcome to either just send me an email. I've got some question marks here. I'm sort of anticipating that some people would be interested in these, but they haven't had time to express interest yet. But this is just a spreadsheet that you go ahead and edit as you see fit. Or you can send me an email if you'd like to join a particular group. The other thing is I penciled in a priority here for these, but people can feel free to change those and vote them up or down. This was just my first effort last January.
Hi, Scott, can you provide some timelines on some of this? Because I think that's what I'm struggling with.
Yeah, so the only firm date in terms of that it is May 1st is sort of the time if we want to present any information about marine mammals in that written marine waters report. That's the time to present at least the draft ideas, but the editing and the actual written document happens over the summer. So there's no huge rush on that. The only firm deadline I've heard is Jeff Rice can only offer those $1,000 honoraria for profile level detail for four species, and it has to be a contract with a non-federal, non-state employee, and it gets paid by the end of July, I think, before the fiscal year ends. So if we want to go deep on four species, we need to do that before the end of July. Other than that, this could be a multi-year effort of the work group that just goes in addition to the thinking we've always done about the southern residents.
Scott, this is Anna. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
You can go ahead and remove the question mark next to my name for the Harbor and Dulles Corpus participation. I'd be happy to contribute.
All right. Thank you, Anna. I was hoping you'd say that.
My pleasure. It's very good. Absolutely. My pleasure to
participate. Erin Ash was planning on being here today. I suspect that she may be interested in leading the Pacific White-Sided Dolphin effort.
The photo ID.
Yeah,
I was about to suggest her.
She had...
You get Anna up at Harbor Corpus, too.
Great. Oops. Any other additions or changes?
That's a pretty good list.
Okay.
You can always add to it if something exciting pops up, as things have been doing lately.
Like that sperm whale.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like what?
Yeah, I'm excited to write about sperm whales now, thanks to Yuka-san. Okay, well it's 11 now, so let's move on to I've sort of dedicated about the next hour to talking through at least four species, harbor porpoises, Biggs killer whales, southern residents, and harbor seals. And we can also talk about minkes or grays. Depending on how the time works out, we may be able to go pretty deep into those. But I wanted to contextualize this just by saying that, you know, I think, as I've said, this can be an ongoing effort, and I'm hoping that some of these products will be something that we revisit regularly, sort of annually. You know, if you missed it, we resolved to meet 3 times per year, not in the summer quarter, but once in the fall, sometime around November, once somewhere in January, and once about now. And my hope is that we can sort of get together in the fall and sort of talk about what happened or what is happening seasonally, and then make edits and updates through the winter, and then create and sort of publish new versions in the spring. So the general vision. So I guess since it just happens that the harbor porpoises have gotten the furthest along, Aileen provided an initial document that some folks have read through that helped Cindy and I kind of try to struggle with what does it mean to create a brief. So I wanted to invite Cindy to sort of summarize the draft that we've created. In that harbor porpoise group, we haven't had feedback yet from Susan or John, so this is the first chance for the larger marine mammal work group to provide us with some feedback. And I think you'll see that there are some questions about what a brief should be, and is this brief enough, basically.
Or too much.
So let me bring that up,
yeah.
And then shall I just navigate for you?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think Cindy will summarize this for us, and then we'll move on to other species. But we got about 15 minutes, hopefully, for each of these initial species.
All right. Yeah, so as Scott was saying, it's been really fun to work on it and to, you know, kind of try to go through there and pull out all the cool information that we have that we're getting more and more of now that harbor porpoises are getting more of their right due of being acknowledged as cool species. But it is hard to, you know, like we've already been talking about, taking it and making it into a brief thing. As I always kind of think that when you write a paper, the hardest part is writing the abstract. Let's condense this all down to a paragraph. Basically, when I was going through this, I was kind of just putting everything, or not everything, but, you know, a fair amount that I thought was, and that Scott and I thought were, was important to go to review, and then, you know, some of it may be too detailed, some of it may not, so open to suggestions and comments there. But Scott had this great idea of doing something like you see on, like, the Wikipedia pages, just like a quick fact section, which I think is really good because it, you know, attention spans, and maybe you just want to find out the one thing, like, great, let's go there. So he kind of modeled that from the Wikipedia page?
Yeah.
So he modeled that. So I thought that was kind of a cool idea. And so we can obviously update that and change what's there, but and ideally we would love to have a porpoise range in our area specifically, but what we have now is at least a global range, or at least something, but we don't really have a good picture for that yet. And then, like, so like a food web diagram or, you know, something telling kind of the whole story in one kind of picture with also the threats there as well might be something that we can add into that as well. But so those are things that we can find or that somebody can create or both, or as we're trying to figure out what to do.
Just a couple thoughts right off the bat, looking at that. Uko Gorter, scientific illustrator, he might be willing to let us use his drawings.
I actually need to contact him. He has some porpoise drawings for us that we use, so I should talk to him about that. It's a good idea.
They're really great.
They are. Well, and actually, we contacted him about creating some for the photo ID that we do, so the different patterns that we're seeing. So we actually have some of those drawings that I need to keep up with him about that. So that's a good idea.
And let's not have the diver look like it's trying to ride the back.
Yeah. And grab the door. But you can't grab the dorsal fin. It's so small. They won't be able to hold on to it.
Yeah.
So we can easily separate that out. We'll put them below the porpoise.
We've got a little scale. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
We'll get those to be those are borrowed from the Wikipedia page. They appear to exist for almost all marine mammals, so they're it's like a free thing. But we can redo them or ask them to be redone.
It's like there's a sign in the Deception Pass State Park where it's a picture of a person hugging a tree. I'm like, yeah, maybe.
So the brief is 15 pages. Is that what I'm reading?
Right. So this is what we're also trying to determine what exactly in here needs to be in here.
Okay.
Like this has everything, and of course the quick facts portion I don't think should be part of the 2-page brief if you're talking about explaining more, because that's going to take up a lot of your space. But maybe it should. Maybe the rest of it should be that short. That's a good question. So if you go down, we go to. So this is based on what Scott said. This is for the Encyclopedia Puget Sound, right? It's got the format that they approved.
Yeah. So these headings are more or less what Jeff approved as a template for the brief, the scope of the brief. But the amount of detail the amount of content was not specified for each section.
Right. So. Basically, with the overview, we just kind of tried to went with like what they, you know, the importance of them in the environment. So they are both predator and prey, kind of highlighting the fact that they're even more important for prey now that the bigs are starting to come in a lot more. And then just their basic Puget Sound history of being here, then gone, then back again. Seemed to be the best kind of overview, at least for that.
should we ask Chris real quickly for his input about food webs diagrams?
Oh yeah.
So Chris, we were wondering if you had any thoughts about is there a food web diagram that might highlight a harbor porpoise, or could such a thing be generated easily? I'm not sure if Chris is still with us, but he may be on mute. Or does anybody else know about that? All right, I'll take it to the modeling work group.
Okay.
I think I've seen drafts for Georgia Basin food web diagrams that I think are highlight connections for specific species, but.
I can't remember if there's one in the Chasco paper.
Okay.
For Puget Sound.
Well, I'll ask Chris offline, and that's it. That's the main thing I'm going to be asking for at this joint meeting coming up in May with the food web folks. Okay, so we can move on. Thanks, Cindy. Mm-hmm.
And so we just highlighted that there are some studies that show that there. More in certain areas are returning from the photo ID that we've been doing up in Anacortes. So then the trends, again, talking about they're gone, they're back. I guess this is one where we could possibly take some away from the overview if we're going to talk about it in trends and events, as we're looking at the whole document as a whole. But basically describing that and... Scott did this really cool thing, and I'll let him talk about the graph, but trying to bring all the data together from these different studies. So we have the Jefferson paper that has the abundance through the aerial surveys, this Evanston paper, which was doing aerial surveys for birds, and they did density estimates for that time for harbor purposes, so he was able to backtrack that. So creating this kind of graph of showing and that could reduce some of our words as well, because if you can just say, like, here's the graph. Look, they were gone. They were here, now they're gone. And then the trends have been coming back. So, let's talk about the graph a little bit.
Yeah, so this is sort of my personal aspiration, is to try to see the big temporal picture for each species to the extent that we can. And the science may not be solid enough to show this to the public yet, but reading through these papers, You know, there was recent interesting work that Steve, and then there's the stock assessments that Lynn mentioned, rail surveys. You notice here that this survey didn't touch, and so Puget Sound has a boundary at the north side of Admiral, right there. So we're not comparing pure apples, inlet being the boundary. And so that's the biggest geographic overlap from the devil is in the details problem. Yeah. And in some cases, like, they haven't seen apple a decade or two later.
That kind of also highlights the fact that we don't have a full system
for, like, data gaps and data priorities. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think we need to start messaging is, like, advantage of that. So the Evanson trends here, really those over the Jefferson and Evanson data sets overlapped in 2015. And so we held to the stock assessment. So that's basically all I did is I set that data point. So that's a little sleight of hand, and there's probably a better way to do it by correcting what is the carrying capacity for harbor porpoises for each of those regions. And so I just assumed that pre-culling or pre-fs of the surveys, but that's by far the least certain thing. But for me, it was we'll get improvements on this, and we can project what recovery for Puget Sound might look like here.
The graphs and everything that we have in here are from just other papers that we're, again, piecemealing together, but we do have some ideas from the Jefferson and Evanson's papers. And we can, you know, pairing capacity curve kind of up in what they call Washington Sound. But we all know that the dolls are gone now and the harbor porpoises are here, and they did this big swap, because that's one of the main things about that they do overlap, but there is some habitat and resource partitioning that seems to be. I have some photographs from my work up in Anacortes, and interesting. And so I'm trying to help with the stranding networks and doing some. Right.
Like, that's like two pages of content.
And that's then that's not even going. Then there's the whole natural history. So, I mean, that could be. We could put some paper. And they didn't go as far up. They don't go as much into the north indication stuff. And then from our long-term research, that there are animals that do continually return at Wycliffe Park, almost at exactly a year,
yeah.
A year from when we saw them. So it was like populations or communities or whatever. We're going to turn that eventually. That are the kind of a larger non-specialized diet. One thing I did want to note here: I don't know who it is carrying it sideways in the mouth, like almost. Like biting at the gills. So then we know, of course, what do they eat? So then how do they die? Mainly the big killer whales, they do in the Salish Sea. And then we went into a little bit about the diseases, what we know about them. That's a lot of Stephanie's papers as well. And then working with from Norman. And then one thing I want to highlight is the fact that we don't know of them from a 1995 paper in the Atlantic, I believe. Actually, it says that we do know those tidal stream habitats are really important for them, so that's important to highlight. And then group size and behavior, just some basic stuff. This does show the male, and it's a very stereotypical behavior that we've talked of with Bill Kinnear. And we just saw one last Thursday, actually, while we were in the field, so that was exciting. So that's kind of a cool thing, where we got all the data from, and if there's any current policy issues we need to bring up. And the data sources and gaps, which you kind of talked about, and putting a few key references in there. So this stuff we're still kind of feathering out. I mean, obviously, anybody has ideas or suggestions, and we're, again, still trying to figure out where.
This section here, you mentioned the importance of gill nets. I think historically it looks like they were important. And on those, from on a year-to-year basis, would be a way to change what sort of events we want to highlight.
Human interaction, and then a few individuals suffocating from eating too big fish. And the ones that in here that Huggins did was it was shad that they ate.
This first attempt.
Good work.
Thanks.
Group, and then we'll circulate it to the larger group for additional written feedback. It will be a transition between the brief level and the profile level.
Is that the encyclopedia?
Yeah.
Or something?
I think that would be a good thing to include in that history.
By the way, Pete, I did
co-op cooperation coordination has been for 15 more years.
He gave. Over the last month or so. It's not quite as far along, but she had a bit of a head start and connect to harbor porpoises. Mm-hmm. Coast transients and the main things that they eat. And vents section to keep it relatively brief and start to tell the story. So she also chose no encounters of that group were documented in the 6 days prior to or after the sighting. So this is, and she came up with what I think most of us have been experiencing in the field. She chose to present that time series. I have a recording of transients and humpbacks in Harrow Strait at the same time, which would be sort of that's a section where that could go. And then she's worked her way through most recent occurrence numbers. So I think she has one for 20. This was from her paper, but then over the next couple of decades, their seasonal distribution has almost turned into a single, like they're here all summer phenomenon, pupping. And
yeah, we see in our area, the harbor porpoises are much less frequent.
One other thing that I've been beginning to do is for notes, but I also put this in here, the seasonal timeline, which I'd love to level. So marine monitoring time series, this is where we could have southern residents over the last 100 years or so. I see evidence that we have a herring time series. We have a variety of place if you want to try to put numbers so that we can start to. To me, was that sounds like mostly they harass, but even a rare. These guys, there's not much to write about here. Which is why we changed this from who eats them to how do they die, so that mostly it's talking about the risks that they face. Biology section, this is kind of where she is now, and any folks who are interested in helping her are welcome to where the recent data is coming from, and I think that's something we may want to point legislative all the gaps, the gap analysis. I forget, they call it the uncertainty. They have sort of a placeholder for media for building more visual contributions for any of these species to the on the media side. I think once we get to the point of publishing 40, any questions about this or suggestions for Monica?
There's a bunch of other sources.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, maybe I'll have her get in touch with my next effort at promoting a little discussion that we can draft in the Southern Resident Killer Whale subgroup that I've been thinking about. Whether those could be part of a brief, but I don't think they should be this year. So, for the Marine Waters report, which should cover 2018. So, rated and updated. So, we have an opportunity to revise those key messages, and that could be part of the years in terms of adding perspective. I think I actually put what I'm thinking about right now for the Southern residents, and I'll prompt the subgroup to think. The answer is this, which is the. This is the version of Ken's data that will be in on the center's website as well.
When do they update the tip?
Yeah. In the new website, you can mouse over that and see that. Oh, I think it says 2018 70. K-POD is, depends on your baseline, kind of pretty darn flat. Or that's one message that you can get out of it. And it manifests in science work, too. I mean, with the baseline. What should be the temporal extent of the data used to look at the trends? I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Olisiak? A Canadian of animals that were harvested for the aquarium, cropped, to... And it's, for me, it tells this important story, which is that there was a huge human impact. I noticed on the EPA site, they have a COC, Southern Resident Killer Whale page. Why don't we ever show folks what it used to be, vital sign. This is prose written by Natalie and Todd, and Lynn's rolling her eyes here. So
sorry, maybe not this... at you. So, mm-hmm. And in the recovery plan at the time, we did two different genetic diversity to northern residents, which gives you more of a 200 number. Ways to estimate, there are different options to look at?
I wanted to mention this. I think it's in the notes for Southern residents. Is, you know, a range of carrying capacities.
Sure.
How could we make estimates of these modeling efforts in some of the Canadian EIS work related to container ship? Thought that maybe the public should see is like this. I think this is how NOAA described what recovery would look like. I'm not saying we have to, but I talk about this period of what I'll call the shooting period. Where, so anyways, there's a dotted line that we could use to connect the 1960s.
Somehow, because that's one of the big questions I see that comes up. Is like, well, what is normal, right? And we don't know.
It's possible. You can make up
all
kinds of stuff.
Numbers. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, can we make one that can
yeah.
get...
So I'll end by saying that I'm excited to talk about that
sure.
within the group, but my plan for the near term, like this year, is to just publish the normal thing and update the key messages associated with that. But in the long run, I'm hoping that we get century-level perspective on each species, and that includes southern residents, at least personally. Any thoughts on that? I know we don't have some of the key players at the table, so I just wanted to start the conversation.
To be continued.
All right.
Yeah.
It was tabled last time. We'll table it till the fall, and we'll continue the conversation. But that's a quick update on the southern residents' thinking, and I'll take that back to the subgroup. We did get Brad did chime in a little bit on the vital sign revisions, so I think we'll be able to provide them with some nice improvements. But there's nothing revolutionary there. Harbor seals, since Steve's not on the call, I think I'll skip this. I'll just spend 1 minute showing you that there are, I think there's a time series here. It's a remarkable effort, and we should call attention to the fact that WDFW and the Canadians have surveyed haulouts for a long time. So these areas have been surveyed 2013, 14, 15, sort of recently. Steve talked at the January meeting about an August survey that the Canadians have planned, and I think he's been working with the partnership to try to ensure that we coordinate with the Canadians. And then there are plots like this that manifested last December at the WDFW Commission meeting. So these are data, recent estimates that are online, at least as part of that presentation, and hints that there's a recent downward trend across, I think this is across all of the Washington, inland Washington waters. But there's, again, the devil's in the details. This is sort of what I think the picture was around 2000s, and I think what we're going to see is hints that it in some subregions it's decreasing. And this came from a Canadian, Alessi again, seems to have this long-term perspective more than many of us. So he has different way of projecting what things used to be like, may have used to be like. For British Columbia. So anyways, I've seen pieces of a time series there, but I haven't had a chance with Steve's help and or others to try to create, to really get into the details of it. That's the plan.
Scott, maybe you could describe a little bit about what's your goal for going back further when there were fewer people here. That's probably not a likely carrying capacity concept in reality today. I guess I'm just curious as to what that gets us in the Puget Sound Partnership monitoring world.
Yeah, so I think that's a really good conversation for us to have with the modeling group.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Chris isn't on the phone anymore, but I'm curious to know what their motivation is. But I think by by at least thinking carefully and quantitatively about the ecological connections, you can put bounds on what it used to be, and then you can ask yourself, okay, if that was what the natural situation was, what do we expect? Like, what changes have we wrought in the ecosystem? Right now, maybe we are not at carrying capacity for the harbor porpoises because of past human actions, so let's look at the status quo now and project forward what we think we could get to. It may not be the same as the natural prehistoric carrying capacity. It probably would be lower for some reason, or for some species it might be higher. But I think the modeling tools are emerging to at least ask those questions. See it in the...
Scott, this is Chris. I apologize. I had to drop off the call for a little bit there. But there are, in the FUBA modeling work that we're doing in conjunction with the COC Marine Survival Project, looking at survival of early marine survival of coho and Chinook salmon in the COC, both in the U.S. and in Canada, harbor seal scenarios are really front and center. Looking at, I think, both those, you know, historic reconstructions as well as future projections of different either natural harbor seal control via transient killer whale or some other kind of to-be-determined management lever pulling related to harbor seal population. So, yeah, that's very, very much on our front burner.
Is that work happening through the modeling work group mostly?
I must confess it's been a while since the modeling work group met, and I think I missed the last time we did meet. So this would be certainly of interest to and in conjunction with the modeling work group. But this has been a lot of this work's been developed mainly with the COC Marine Survival Project over the last several years.
Yeah, so I guess to answer your question, Lynn, I'm just curious to know that for I've really been enjoying this process of learning about other species because mm-hmm. I mostly think about killer whale acoustics. So I'm very curious to know for particular species like harbor seals, what can we dig out of the UW archives in terms of the call records that might get us to an actual measurement of what the abundance used to be? Like, where in the historical documents that we have do we have hints as to like what, how many animals were removed? Maybe we have none, but part of asking like what theoretically, what could we model as the historic reconstruction is, for me, it's asking, do we have any data that can verify whether we're close or not? So I suspect the answer is mostly no, but this group seems like a great group to at least ask the question. Give us, and for me, I think in the biggest policy-making and people-educating perspective, knowing what the place was like naturally is important. Even if we'll never get back there because we're overpopulated in comparison, maybe it's my personal opinion, but I find it fascinating to like think about what the state of the ecosystem was before we got here and whether we're likely to ever get back. We can ask that question with the models that I think I'm seeing emerge on both sides of the border.
I think it's interesting, too. I guess I'm just trying to get the next step of how does that feed into the goals of all this. Learning about, historical pre-people stuff is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Does it help us with conservation of Puget Sound and resources today? Maybe. And I guess that's the connection I was looking for. Of how does that help us kind of today on the ground doing the work we're trying to do as part of this bigger process. So,
yes. Yeah. So maybe the southern residents are a tough one because it's so charged right now. But I think if I am trying to motivate somebody to call their legislator, that it would be helpful to show them that we're pretty sure we used to have a lot of killer whales around here and that we're more or less where we are, we're at the end of the capture era and the end of the shooting era. And this is what recovery would look like. And this is where we're going right now. it motivates, I think it will, I think that would motivate your average citizen to contact the legislator.
Well, other, that's back to the who's the audience and what's the purpose. And, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think if you can show, like, in those graphs, like, that definite human impact that affects you more directly as a layperson who doesn't know much about it, like, oh, wow, that huge thing, that was because of us, or at least to some degree, it might actually help, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm really not sure, but let's see, it's 12, but I'll end with the thought that, like, if for Harbor purposes, if we can show that there was a reduction from fisheries, general fisheries impact, probably related to gillnets, I think that helps raise awareness about making sure we don't get back to using gillnets without ways of excluding them. So I think in most cases it may tie to specific bold actions for each particular species. Culling for harbor seals. And if we have the historic perspective on, we already culled dramatically, we don't really know what happened. Maybe the models will tell us a little bit about what likely happened, but I guess the point is we should at least know our history before we repeat it.
Sure. Knowing history. I'm not arguing or... I'm just trying to figure out, yeah, how this ties into the goals of this work group, of the Puget Sound Partnership, of the monitoring program.
Yeah,
yeah, it's all very interesting stuff, and I don't disagree with anything you're saying.
It's important to know to talk about that though, because like it is interesting, but there may be certain things that will really help, maybe shouldn't, and we have to. We're all here on borrowed time from other places.
Yes.
You know what is the most effective thing that we can do right now for what we're talking about.
Access to commercial whaling. And along the same vein, when I speak to some of these marine mammal populations and trying to get them to understand that there have been a lot of in-depth
and maybe more species specific too. There may be certain species that's really important for.
Yeah.
I suspect that in most cases we may not get to the historic. Maybe it'll just be sort of where, I guess where Monica ended up, right? The existing apples to apples.
Let me put in a point from an old standpoint. The Marine Mammal Protection Act started in, as you all know, 1972. That might be a baseline to help answer this question. I think it's the most important question maybe we're all facing. And was the Marine Mammal Protection Act intended to be a management act or a preservation act? I take the position that it was meant to be a management act. If we can trace, therefore, all of these population trends from 72 to now, use that as a tool, we can maybe zero in on the necessity of revisiting the Marine Mammal Protection Act to make sure that the fisheries are being able to manage as the management is needed. Did that make any sense? No. I think it does from my perspective, and which is overall, and we need, maybe even change the definition of conservation to management. Preservation of all species, of all breeds, of everything, is not working out for us. It's not working out for the southern residents. Mm-hmm. And while they're going away, the northern residents are improving and are the humpbacks. Mm-hmm. It's got to boil down to prey, doesn't it?
Right, but I mean, there's something with the residents. I mean, if you're a specialized feeder, you're more screwed than anybody else as things change. And the southern residents are much more specialized than the other ones. That's one of the reasons why the other ones are still okay. So, I mean, that goes into it as well. Like, how much can you do if they are specialized, and how much we do to mitigate that, to help them, is the question.
That is the question.
it's a little 12:05 or so. I wanted to just ask Francis, did you have anything, or did anyone... did you have anything you wanted to say about minkes at this point?
Well,
I can give a brief update. I have managed to recruit help.
Yay!
I've got other Minky enthusiasts.
Woohoo!
So, we'll be adding to the database we have, so 2016 to 2018 opportunistic encounters. These are coming from naturalists and whale watch captains for the most part. And so continuing on into the future, this is probably where most of this, it'll be an ad hoc monitoring of animals that are using the area until I can kind of just by getting out in the field again or until it becomes feasible. But we are working towards a catalog. It's something I've been saying for far too long, but it is going to happen. and I will be able to provide, I think, a minimum number of animals using the Salish Sea, but I do want to stress that the data that the North Pacific Minke Whale Project has collected has been focused on foraging ecology as well as photo ID, but it's not specifically just photo ID for population estimates per se, so there are some limitations surrounding the data that folks should be aware of.
Okay.
That's it.
Thank you.
Yay, Minkies.
Feel free to add to the spreadsheet in terms of other folks who might be proofreaders. Related to humpbacks, I went to the ACS Puget Sound talk by Erin Gless a couple Wednesdays ago, and she was very interested in what we've been doing and has offered to be a proofreader or author for the species that have less interest from our existing members. So she's thinking about that. You can see her name is up there a lot. We'll see how she does. But does anyone want to talk briefly about gray whales or humpbacks?
I'll give you an anecdotal bit of information. I talked to the whale watch folks out of Anacortes 2 weeks ago. For certain purposes that aren't important to what I'm going to say, but the fellow that I talked to, I forget his position, but it was had to do with advertising, so you might expect some of this enthusiastic language. But what he said to me relative to orcas was that in their last 600 trips, they saw 20 southern residents. Now, I don't know what time span that 600 trips covers. I didn't ask that question. But the other thing that he said that's interesting relative to humpbacks is we see huge number of humpbacks. So I travel up to Telegraph Cove, and we've seen increases in humpbacks over the years. Maybe there, well, there are lots of reasons for these things, but this is just a piece of anecdotal information that I got from the Anacortes-based whale watchers. There's two boats out of Anacortes right now. They're going to send one of those two boats down to Port Angeles. But I would posit that they may be good sources of population data.
There's also a Facebook group, Humpback to the Salish Sea, or something along those lines, where there are IDs made and matches. They're using some of the open source matching software, and animals have been matched to the Mexican stock and the American stock, I believe, as well as Hawaii. The Marine Education and Research Society up in BC are also keeping a track on humpbacks in the Salish Sea, and I know that John Klampakidis and Cascadia sent people out on, I think, at least one whale watch boat out of Port Angeles. So I would say Cascadia is probably the best source for humpbacks. When they're back on that, they'd be a good group.
Yeah, and he's the last ways of whales last year, and a couple of times last year, I saw John give a talk about humpbacks and showing those trends that there's a really coming back to the area. So he's probably a you back to the single graphs and second graphs.
Yeah, we'll reach back out to John. And Aaron did show one of his graphs that showed this sort of explosion of humpbacks roughly 10 years ago. So I think, yeah, we'll be able to leverage the observations of the whale watchers to get at least a proxy for what's been going on.
Does anybody know the gray whales? I saw in a paper with the one that recently stranded and they brought up to Elliott Bay, or that had died, was emaciated, and they said in that story that that seems to be a growing trend in the gray whales on the West Coast this year, that they've seen other emaciated whales, not necessarily here, but I think in the other grounds.
Mexico and the Southwest Fishery Science Center is doing the photogrammetry with the drones during the migration right now. So,
well, before I go into some closing comments in the last 15 minutes, I have you all on the phone. Any suggestions for other experts that I could try to recruit to broaden our expertise further? I guess I'm specifically looking in maybe below gray whales. From here down?
Well, I'm sure there's someone working on sea otters on the Outer Coast. I can find out. I know folks up in BC who are working on sea otters.
Talk to Jeffries about sea otters?
And Deanna Lynch. She's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
I know up in Alaska, Mark Weber is part of the stranding stuff up there.
For sea otters?
Yeah. And so he knows a fair amount. He was just in a book I just read.
Kristen Leiter,
UW,
PhD student.
Her name is
Jesse. Yes,
it's
Jesse.
Okay. Jesse Ham, H-A-M?
Ham,
H-A-M. And what was the name?
It was.
Deanna
Lynch.
You're welcome.
What was this?
L-Y-N-C-H.
Okay.
I think Mark Weber's TVs.
Okay.
And the bottlenose dolphin, I mean, Cascadia's really been the one that's been documenting that down there, but Dave Anderson and John, I'm not sure who to do that, but Dave Anderson might be one to. He's been, I think, working on the paper with Golden Gate. Documenting that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. I'll make that one of my summer homework projects. Mm-hmm. Homework assignments.
I had a quick question for Frankie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So a boat down here off of Whidbey that goes out and does whale watching trips, recently I've been talking with them, and he says he's documented every single minke that they've seen out there, and they apparently see minkes quite a bit. Are you interested in that sighting data from all the way down here?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I will send it to you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott, you could probably possibly put me down to Northern Firthfield. I mean, everything. Andrew tried to know. I wrote a pretty comprehensive report for a treaty case a few years ago. And I mean, the focus is really with Northern Firthfield.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
All right. So, final business. We just did that. Thank you. Initial ideas for vital signs or indicators to be considered this summer by the Vital Sign Revision Project. It's a kind of a big conversation.
We wrote up a whole harbor seal vital sign. I would assume Natalie has all of that.
Okay. Maybe ask her if not start from scratch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not to reinvent the wheel.
That was the.
We also had recommendations for updates to the Southern Resident Killer one as well. So it's and not a new conversation.
Yeah. These are work group documents, right?
Yeah.
All right. I'll look for those. Maybe we'll revise those and talk about them this winter. Oh, yes. John Scordino in January mentioned the updating marine mammal monitoring inventory. There's, again, in the archives of the marine mammal work group, there is a spreadsheet which I will dig up, and I guess I'd propose that I'll cue you over the summer to try to add at least yourself and anybody else who is not in that inventory of monitoring activities. And that hopefully will emerge sometime next spring with something that's up to date.
And if you give us a reason why we're doing it, that would be really helpful as far as identifying gaps, and maybe there's funding has been an incentive in the past to work on that. Otherwise, it languishes, I will say.
I will try to motivate it with what I'm starting to hear in the science panel, is that order of $1 million coming as a precedent probably to groups that already have proposed near-term actions. But in the future, for the next round, if that precedent is set, that may motivate us.
Scott?
Yes?
Scott, I should highlight to you, just so that you're all aware, southern resident killer whales have been added as a vital sign, but there are no near-term actions that are actually focused on southern resident killer whales.
That is a good point.
Because it came in, so I think if I understand correctly, and someone please correct me if I'm wrong, is trying to understand this whole vital signs and near-term actions is a bit of a spaghetti junction to me still. But it's every 4 years they come out, and so it won't be until 2022, I think, that the next round is, something like that. So there is contaminant prey are addressed kind of through other things. Actions in a kind of slide manner, but there's nothing addressing noise or vessel impact.
This is Jenna Judge. I can chime in a little bit here. So I'm looking at the action agenda overview, which is kind of the high-level packet that we put out, and to address this, and given the Orca task force is going on and highlighted all these needs, that wasn't in sync with the solicitation for near-term actions, as you're highlighting, that we actually did add orcas to the area of focus. And it says here that to advance southern resident orca recovery, this chapter, referring to chapter 3 of the Action Agenda Implementation Plan, calls for implementation of the governor's task force recommendations, as well as implementation strategies and associated actions in the action agenda that reduce the key threats to southern residents. So, yes, it wasn't explicitly covered because it didn't happen as part of the process, but I think, most of the toxics and prey things should be covered anyway. And and regardless, the NTAs and the action agenda covers a lot more than what can be
there is
funding, so we want to highlight ways to move forward on the other recommendations, too.
From the San Juan County perspective, we've been working pretty hard at this, and our LIO coordinator has identified that there are no NPAs addressing the disturbance of noise and vessel traffic threats, which does present a significant gap. And the Habitat SI leads have been asked to address this in a matter of urgency with concurrence with the EPA. As a vital sign, it's an overwhelming no NPAs from any of the Northwest Straits counties really have done.
Yeah, and those are conversations I'm less part of too, saying it is good keeping track of all of the elements that the partnership's engaged in. So I'm happy to track down additional updated key funding that we have, and there is an effort underway to help hold mobilizing.
And I think
it's complicated, as I know you know. What we should think about is how we can move some of this forward. Messages from what we're learning from monitoring and what's going on, so that information to help make recommendations to our policy partners, including that the length of science and information we have, or maybe use it to highlight work being done by MRCs. And I've had some great initial conversations with Northwest Straits Commission folks. Meet you virtually, and I hope to meet you in person soon. But just, I know it's
audiences for these working groups and for the material that we produce to help.
I think a deficiency that's been recognized is kind of the need for strengthening the, and I think that I hope you'll see that there's a track for improved LAO plans too.
Well, I'll put that up. I mean, that's a theme that the ones that are most valuable to continue. I think that'll help us efforts, then we might as well not catalog them again. So I agree. Okay, in your response to my survey, you might have mentioned something about
old PSAMP meetings. Is that what you're talking about?
All right. I'll look for those. I just want to make sure that you, good luck in your field work, if you have any this summer. And
getting out on the boat soon. We got a small boat donated to us, so we'll be able to get out past Burroughs.
Yep, I can break in here, just giving a plug for our whale warning flag. We'll be out.
Frankie. All right, thank you all. We'll be in touch online. Let it literally hang out. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So are those going to hand it out to...
All, like whales, dolphins, and porpoises, right? Everything.
I'm trying very hard to give this a new chance.
I know.